Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium with a volunteer state twist. Bo James here, joined by Bobby Simmons and the Georgia Greyhound himself, Jerry Oates. How's everybody doing this week?
I'm doing good, sir. How are you?
Oh, doing good, other than freezing. It's the first of spring, and we had snow last night here in the hills of Tennessee.
Goodness. Well, it got to 50 today here in Atlanta. It was a little chilly. The wind chill never got it out of the 40s, so it was kind of a brisk spring day.
We're 25 degrees below normal.
Jerry, how did the St. Patrick's Day thing go down there? Good?
Oh, my gosh. It was wild. Oh, gosh. It's amazing what alcohol would do to people.
How many people did they estimate was there this year?
They was expecting a million, but they had a million last year, and a lot of people were afraid, you know, that many were going to show up this year, and it was down some, but you couldn't tell the difference. You couldn't tell the difference.
When you're talking a million people coming in and they're all drunk, what's 100,000 up or down? I mean, you know.
Exactly. It's, you know, this parade thing, the people get down there the afternoon before to see a parade now. A parade. I guess I've done too much in my life to get excited about a parade.
if they ever had serious trouble there, I mean, I was there one year. I happened to go down the year that they had the James H. Drew Carnival there, and they lost a ton of money that year, the carnival did there, because nobody cared about the rides. They just come to get drunk. That was the only reason they came.
Well, that's it. I mean, I know... like at 12 o'clock at night down there on River Street, a lot of the bars have to close. They're sold out of everything. And there's still hours to go yet. They have to close up. It's just one big drunk fest.
Do they still dye the river green?
No.
They don't do that anymore?
But I don't know if they do or not, Bobby.
I've never been, but I've read that they used to dye the river green down through there.
They may try to drink that river if they see it green. They think it's homemade beer.
Yeah, they would. Listen. It's, you can't believe the. Of course, it brings in millions upon millions of dollars. I mean, you know. But it's
a big
expense.
How much do the hotel rooms go for?
Oh, they jack them way up. They're like $250.
Yeah.
And it costs the city so much for. I know the police out at Tybee, a lot of them had to go, you know, they volunteered to work, you know, and it's a great expense for the city of Savannah to do it. But when you take in that kind of money, you know, it doesn't matter.
Jeez.
Do they bring in that? I mean, think about a million people coming in from out of town. It seems like they'd have the National Guard there waiting on them.
You would think. It's just, you know, it's... Of course, they didn't arrest as many as they did last year. But it's just one down at Tybee, there was a lot of arrests.
I bet the courts were full all week, though.
Oh, good Lord.
Well, I got one more for you, Jerry, that I read about yesterday, and knowing you as are like me, you'll appreciate this. I read yesterday where a fishing captain on a fishing boat in the Gulf of Mexico, and they did not say where he was out of, but he had a guy out there that had hired him on a private fishing day. They hooked a 21-foot great white shark.
I saw that on the news last night up here. They showed that.
They said the thing looked like a submarine.
3,000 pounds.
Yes, and they say that it's illegal to take it out of the water and put it on the boat like I would want it on the boat. But they hooked this thing, and they said the captain cut the engine off and throwed it in neutral or whatever he did, and they said this thing towed that boat around for 4 hours.
I believe it. We had a few years a day, they have a polar plunge down at Tybee. Well, I don't know how they got these GPSs on two great whites, but they did, and there was two of them about a mile out where they went in. Two great whites here in Savannah.
You just, they can just make fun of me. I'm not going in there.
You know, I didn't explain that to you.
I mean, that's just crazy.
Put that great white in the parking lot of Walmart. You'll find it, right? But not in the water.
I mean, if it walks up on the beach, I think I can take it. But I ain't going out there where it lives.
Yeah.
No, you don't know what's out there, man.
Oh, geez.
That's the first thing I think about every year when we go to the Gulf. Misty wants to go to the beach. You know, I get about 8 feet to the water. That's as close as I get. Because there's stuff in there you can't see that will kill you fast.
Bo, them animals look at me and you on the edge of the beach and they're thinking buffet. I mean, this is, no. It's like we went to SeaWorld one year and Debbie said, I sure would like to go down there and feed that orca, that big whale. And I said, Debbie, that whale will see you and think lunch. And I said, that'll be the end of you. I mean, geez.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, how long does it take them to get ready for that St. Patrick's Day? When do they start planning? They already started planning for next year?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, it's a big deal. It's a big, 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 big deal. You know, it's just blocking streets off, and you know that's a big deal. It takes. You know, they have to have a policeman at every intersection.
Sure.
Get people out of the way.
Making some overtime then.
If you think about it in very general terms and very basic terms, if a million people come in there and the city clears $3 a person or $10 a person, that's $10 million they make in, what, 2-3 days? I mean, you know, you got a plan. Y'all come back.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, it's just, I mean, I'm sure some of those restaurants and bars down on River Street, that's their year.
Oh, yeah.
Because you cannot get into any place down there, nowhere.
I'll give you the opposite side of that. This past weekend here in Bristol was race week, and we got some tickets, went up Sunday, and I was amazed at how many of the parking lots and the campgrounds were empty for the Bristol race.
I watched that race, Bo, and I saw a lot of empty seats.
In the row that we sit in, it was me, Misty, and two other guys. Four guys was all in the row. 16 seats, four of them had people sitting in them, and our two were free. We were complimentary through the sheriff's department. There was just empty seats everywhere.
What are ticket prices up there now?
They run from anywhere from like $100, $115 to about $40 to $50. But, you know, it's $10 to $25 up. Depending on where you park. A hamburger in there is going to cost you $10. A lemonade was $7 for a 16-ounce lemonade, $7. You know, we pack a cooler and go in there, and we didn't, other than parking, we didn't spend any money the whole time we was there. But if you take a family of four, they can't afford it.
Of course not. That's why I was shocked when I watched the race Sunday. I said, my gosh. Now, I know the night race is packed.
Well, we went last year, did, and they still had two sections up top that there was nobody sitting in.
You're kidding.
No, it's just they can't, people can't afford it. I mean, it's just, they've outpriced herself. Plus, I don't think really, you know, I'm not a racing fan. I go just because it's the big thing here, but I went when I was a kid with my dad and my uncles. They don't have the name value drivers anymore. I mean, they got a lot of young guys that people are just now starting to catch on, but, you know, all the guys like Harry Gant, Richard Petty, even, you know, Earnhardt, and you look at Jeff Gordon, even he's an old-timer now. He's been racing for 20-some years.
Yeah, well, the thing about it is, too, it's a little bit of everything. The cost of living, you know, gas just to get there and get home, and like you said, the tickets, my gosh.
Yeah, man. If you come in from out of town, if you rent a hotel, even if you want it one night, you're going to pay for it for four nights. You have to do a four-night minimum. And they jacked them prices up high.
Yeah, and it's just everybody, you know, I don't know.
We pulled in the parking lot, walked up, got on the trolley. We got right in that racetrack in minutes. I mean, there's a little bit of a wait getting in there, and we went right in there. So hotel rooms were empty. Campgrounds were just, I mean, some of them had one or two campers in them. Some of them, they didn't even open up part of the campground because they had nobody.
How about getting out of there? Is it a trauma to get out of there?
No, it's not bad. Everybody is, everybody's probably, probably 35, 40 minutes to get back to your car. Time you get out of your seat, get down to where the trolley's, ride the trolley's back over, and they got it moving out of there. I mean, they've got good roads around there where they get the people out of there. But, like, you know, I grew up here, so I just went out a back road down by the river, across railroad tracks, and hit 11E 20 miles down and got out of town.
Yeah, well, you know where to go.
Yeah, but if you don't know, you're going to sit a little, you know, they say they can, if it's sold out, they can get everybody out of there within 3 hours.
That's not bad.
Yeah. You know, most of them, when they leave there, the ones we were on the trolley with, they had no business getting in a car. I hope they weren't driving.
That's another problem.
I mean, that was the drunkest I've ever seen some people on that trolley riding back over to the car. But it hurt. I mean, Monday morning, during the Monday morning news, they already are running ads for August race, tickets on sale. So they
started night race,
the day
right?
after. That's the night race, yeah. They'll do a family race night where you get to meet the drivers on Thursday night. The locals run, and then the trucks run Friday night. They run a race Saturday night. They run a race with the locals and the trucks on Wednesday. Thursday's the meet and greet with all the race car drivers. They shut downtown Bristol down, just up and down Main Street and State Street. They have them set up in tents where you go up and down through there and meet them. They got a race Saturday night, Friday and Saturday night. So they got four nights going on. So they offer them more in August than they do in March. You know, and 3 days before the race here, it was spitting snow. So they were really worried about that this year too. They were going to get snowed out. But we count on that. I mean, like Bobby was saying, if we can get 10 people out of everybody that comes from out of, $10 out of everybody that comes in from out of town, businesses are doing good.
Yeah, they're doing good.
And even the people selling the merchandise out on the street and stuff, I didn't see people even really gathered around their tents buying anything.
Really?
Yeah. So it's just.
Well, that stuff's expensive too.
Yeah. And you're going to pay the city tax, you're going to pay the county tax, you're going to have a vendor fee and everything else. I mean, it's not cheap for them to get set up to sell that stuff out there on the street.
I'm sure it's not.
Maybe they can just turn that race into the St. Patrick's Day North up here then. Bring some of them out of Savannah.
Yeah, that would be a blessing.
I got a story for you guys here. We mostly talk about the old days here, but I want to tell you something that happened last Saturday night in Union City, Tennessee, that's been a big talk on the internet and dressing rooms, and all the boys have been talking about it all week. You know, I'm 500 miles away from it, and I knew about it Saturday night before it was over with. Some guy named Nathan from Louisiana ran Union City, Tennessee, loaded up the card with Bobby Eaton, the Rock and Roll Express, Brian Christopher, his dad Jerry Lawler, Trevor Murdoch. He brought wrestlers in from everywhere. No money. He drew less than 200 people. He'd sent most of them a deposit, and then he was hoping for a walk up. Well, when he didn't get the money, some of the boys took him in the back, beat the poo out of him, stripped him naked, and peed all over him, and then made him drink a cup of pee. And then threw him out of the building where all the fans could see him.
That's a good one. I never heard of that one.
Now the word is the wrestlers that slapped him around and peed on him and made him drink the pee are all going to get arrested.
I'm sure they will.
Yeah.
So Nathan won't be back running any more shows. Is that correct?
He did a show like this out of Memphis Monday night, and through his tears and everything else, he promised everybody he was coming back to run again. So I'm assuming he probably got a tax return, and he sent everybody the deposits out of the tax return. About this time of the year, you promoters pop up everywhere, it seems. But that just, I've never heard nothing in all my born days like that.
No, I can't top that one.
I don't think anybody wants to top that one.
Well, I don't work anymore, but I got news for you. I don't need any more experience. And I would leave the house unless I had the money before I went.
Yeah. They called Jerry Lawler the king for a reason. All reports I've heard, he's the only one that got his money. All of his money. He got it before he got out of the car. He made the guy come out in the parking lot and pay him before he got out of the car.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
yeah. So I will see Ricky and Robert Sunday, so I will get their input on what happened and what went down there.
They might be incarcerated.
Maybe.
Where are you working Sunday?
Cherokee, North Carolina, over at the casino.
Okay.
First time they ever had wrestling there. They got a show there Sunday afternoon, 3:00.
Who's running that?
My cousin KC.
Oh, okay.
It took him about 2 years to get in there. He's putting.
You know where he lives then, so if he don't pay.
That's one I don't have to worry about. Plus, it's only about 68 miles from the house. That makes it even better.
I know you're going to have a guest on here, but I got to get this one off my mind. Did y'all hear what happened Monday night?
No.
About Paul Barrow, you didn't hear about it?
Oh, well, no. They stole the urn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, coming out there, he had that punk guy. I didn't see it, but some of the guys were telling me about it. I can't lower myself to watch it. That he come out there and had this urn, said he couldn't believe that they, as fat as he was, they could get him in this urn and this and this. You know, that man had a family. You know, there's some things, there's no words. There are no words to do something like that. If you have to do that to draw a dollar, you're sick.
Well, hopefully his family will get a payoff out of it, seeing how they're still using his image and likeness and name.
Oh, I'm sure he done signed all that away years ago.
Yeah.
Well, I know he had signed a new Legend contract.
Legends contract.
So he'd kind of intimated that he had recently done that, you know, when we talked over the weekend, but I don't
care what he signed. To do that, to me, there's some things you don't do.
You know, Ernesto told me years ago, we were, the year he died, as a matter of fact, we were sitting in the Grand Casino in Biloxi, Mississippi, and me and Tom were sitting at a table and we were talking, and we were watching people, and we talked about all sorts of stuff, but that was right around the time they had done something on TV. Oh, they were doing the thing with Gold Dust where they were doing the semi-religious type stuff they were doing. And Tom said, Bobby, he said, there's two things you don't do. He said, you don't fake a heart attack. He said, and you don't involve God in nothing to do with the wrestling business in the form of an angle.
I would touch it with a 10-foot pole, man.
Yeah, I said, you ain't got to worry about me.
Is there any boundaries anywhere in this society now, though?
No.
I don't care what it is in. I don't care what sport it's in, what entertainment, what. Just walking down the street with people, there's no boundaries.
You don't know what the guy next to you's got on his mind either, so you never.
That's the sad part.
You know, you gotta. I watch these crazy people on the expressway every morning here in Atlanta in this traffic, and they'll somebody will do something, and they'll be hanging out the window cussing and screaming at people. And I'm thinking, y'all don't know what they got under the seat.
That's the whole problem.
You know, I mean, these people are crazy.
And I'm going to tell you, this country is the sickest country in the world now. It's sick.
It's getting worse.
It's depraved. People are mad. They've gone mad.
Mm-hmm. And they think there's no hope.
They may be right on that.
Yeah. So that is the biggest thing. They think there's no hope for them. It gets crazy. I've got to where I can read people when I see them coming up to the merchandise table now. I'm around so many different kinds of people every week. I tell my wife, they come walking at us, son, this guy's wanting something for free, or that guy's going to try to steal something, or this guy's going to tell you he's some famous wrestler. You know, people just lie right to your face. And you're the one in the wrestling business. They're trying to convince themselves.
Yeah, I was fixing to say, you know, I told one guy, we got a guy, you know, there's people around Atlanta that, you know, they tell these whoppers and stuff, and it's gotten to where it gets on my nerves really bad. But I tell people, if you're going to tell a lie, you at least have to tell it to someone that has just a small inkling of maybe believing it.
You can't tell
us about the wrestling business and expect us to buy it. You know, I mean, we lived it. Yeah, it was. You can't do it. And I mean, I don't know. Let me swing the other direction here and just kind of bring everybody up to date that's listening about our friend Michael. Most everybody knows me and Michael. I'm probably closer to Michael Norris than I am my own brother. We're that good of friends, and he's our friend is hurting pretty bad, fellas. For those that don't know, his dad passed away this past week. So in a matter of 3 weeks, he's lost both parents, his home. He's had more put on him than the normal person could stand, and he's held up remarkably well. But we have to go back to Mobile again. I'm leaving tomorrow afternoon, going back down there. I have to do the memorial service for his dad on Saturday, and I just everybody that's listening. Keep good thoughts. Say a prayer for Michael and his family, and he sure does need some encouragement.
I talked to him today, like I told him. You know, he's had something to keep him busy all this. It's really going to hit him after Saturday.
Yeah.
I told him, sleep for 2 days, and then when he gets up, get out of town.
Yeah. Well, I've told him he can come up here for a few days if he wants. And my advice to him was to go play circus, go back to work. And let all this other stuff kind of shake out as it shakes out. And speaking of circus, did Tom Ernesto call you, Mr. Oates?
Yes, he did.
He said he's going to get you in the cannon.
That's what he said.
Yeah, I hope you don't mind me giving your number out. I wouldn't give it to just anybody, but he was close.
No.
He wanted to holler at you.
You know that's fine, buddy.
One other thing, Scrappy McGowan's dead, Charlie McGowan. A lot of people know Charlie. Charlie worked for Georgia Championship Wrestling for a lot of years. He kept time. He drove the ring truck. He did a lot of different things. But Charlie's been in the hospital. He's doing well. They transferred him back over to the convalescent home where he's living now. Charlie's 96. He's sharp as a tack. I saw him this morning, and he's very sharp. He's still right on the ball. It's just his body's giving him some problems, and we need to remember Mr. Charlie. And if anybody out there would like to drop him a note, he's living at a convalescent home in Stockbridge, Georgia. It's called Laurel Park, Laurel Park, two words. And I don't know the address, but I'm sure you can find it online. It's in Stockbridge, Georgia. And if you address it to that Laurel Park and attention Charlie McGowan, I'm sure he'll get it. And he would love to hear from anybody that remembers him and probably pick his spirits up a little bit, but he's doing well. He's back home, so just let's remember Charlie and Scrappy.
That's it. And since remember, we got a lot of brothers and sisters out there with a lot of health problems right now.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it's me and Bobby talked about this today, Jerry. We're afraid to answer the phone.
I know that's right.
Yeah, I mean, it's just Bill Smith and Bobby, member of his family. I've not heard an update from Scott Till, but they took him off life support.
Yeah.
Last I heard, he was Moondog Spike. He was also one of the hippies, worked out in the Northwest, and he's from around Nashville. I met him a few times a few years ago, real good guy. And he's been in bad health for a long time now. So,
how old the fellow is he?
He was, I'm guessing, early 50s.
Really?
Yeah. You know, and just the miles of riding in the car and taking the bumps every day, and, you know, everybody's a Superman until they stop. That's when it really gets them, I think. And I just, hey, like I said, I hate when bad news always seems to come in the morning time. When that phone rings early in the morning, it always seems to be something bad. So, but let's just remember everybody out there, and the ones of us still stay connected to each other and let everybody else know what's going on with everybody.
Yeah.
So, that's it. Well, let's go ahead and get the first break out of the way, and then when we come back, we're going to have our guest here, Terry Sims Garvin, the beauty himself, and should be a very entertaining show.
Wrestling fans, Anarchy Wrestling television tapings are the second and fourth Saturdays of every month at 4236 Level Grove Road in Cornelia, Georgia. For more information on Anarchy Wrestling and on the shows to watch the television product and a whole lot more, go to anarchy-wrestling.net. That's Anarchy Wrestling, the second and fourth Saturdays of every month in Cornelia, Georgia.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Whether you're having an autograph session, personal appearance, or live event, we got just the person you need to contact for all of those needs. SBI Bookings is home of some of the best stars in the wrestling industry today. They provide you with the best talent this business has to offer, from Kevin Nash, Larry Zbysko, Scott Steiner, and many, many more. So who will you contact next time you're planning an event? The men of SBI Bookings. Check them out at sbibookings.com.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first party you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Back. I still got Bobby and Jerry with me.
We're here.
Yes.
All right. I made it through test number two. First, I got the show on the air, and then we made it through the commercial break. So I'm learning as we go, folks. So I heard that music there. I used to wait all week just to hear that music, hear the wrestling coming on, and I was in the town with Joe Kazana Friday night, and that is the ringtone he has on his cell phone. I don't know how he got that, but that's when his phone rang.
I don't even know what the name of that song is. I'd like a copy of it myself.
he tried to explain to me on how to get it, but it was too technical for me. So, All right, we got our guest here, Terry the Beauty Garvin. I'm going to get him on here. Now, Bobby, did you ever work anywhere around Terry?
Never did. Not that I know of.
Yeah, he started in the mid-'80s. He trained with Bill Dundee out of Nashville. Did you ever know him, Jerry?
I may have.
Yeah. So he worked in Dallas, worked for Fuller's in Alabama, Knoxville, worked for Jerry Garrett. He worked for Vern Gagne a little bit. But let's get him on here. Let me see if I can pass test number three here.
To get a Magic Jack commercial, I'm hanging up.
I'm done.
Hey, Michael said that Magic Jacks pay off pretty good.
We would Terry, know.
Terry, are you with us?
Who let the dogs out?
Yes, I am.
There he is, the beauty himself. So, Terry, we got you on
what
here
is
with
that?
Bobby Simmons and Jerry Oates. I think you got your TV turned up in the background, don't you?
No, I was messing with you. You know, I like to play ribs. What can I say?
Ribs are not allowed anymore. They outlawed them. Anywhere with anything involved in pro wrestling, ribs have been outlawed.
Yeah, and wrestling's definitely outlawed because they're sure not doing it now, are they? Not like we know, anyway.
Yep. How you doing, my friend?
Hey, buddy, I am alive. What more can I say, you know?
Yep. Bobby Simmons, I want to tell you something about our friend here, Terry Garvin. He is one of the them wild and crazy wrestlers that turned out to just love Jesus with all his heart.
Well, so, good.
Yeah.
Now, wait a minute. I've always loved Jesus with all my heart.
Well, there we go.
You know, born and raised Catholic, went to Catholic school from grade one, you know, all the way through high school. Now, let's just say that I've not always been on the beaten path. You know, there's always been a devil on my shoulder. And I definitely have, you know, flaws. But as time's gone by, that yes, I've recommitted myself, and I am not Catholic anymore. About 2 years ago, I changed to the Methodist Church, which is very close to the Catholic Church. Okay. And now I am Methodist. But, you know, my belief in religion is this. It doesn't matter if you're Catholic. It doesn't matter if you're Baptist. It doesn't matter if you're Presbyterian, whatever. As long as you believe in God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit, and that Jesus Christ died on the cross for your sins and mine, then that's all there is to it, you know. But
amen. It don't matter what's road over the door.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, I've ridden that lightning bolt 16 different directions, but I've come to find out that any answer that I need is always there for me as long as I ask.
Yeah.
So, fellows, I'm sorry. I don't believe that I've worked with you. I've worked a lot of different territories, you know, from Japan to BFE.
You was on some of those Dale Mann loops, weren't you?
Yes, I was. Yes, I was, as a matter of fact. You know, I can remember when I started, lived in Louisville, I wasn't a wrestler always. It's a little interesting, you know. A lot of people know me as the Beauty from the tag team Beauty and the Beast. A lot of people know me as Terry Garvin. A lot of people know me as Terry Sims. But
hey, well, now, did Dundee give you the Garvin name just because you look so much like Jimmy Garvin?
Actually, what happened was I lived in Nashville. I'd moved to Nashville and had a hair salon. I was a hairdresser. That was my first real profession. I was married very young. Had two children very young, okay? By the time I was 20 years old, I had two children. Amanda and Byron. Amanda being the oldest, Byron the youngest. And when I say old and young, I'm talking 32 and 30. And I just turned 25 yesterday. Times two. 25 times two. So that'll give you a little bit of light. But I was a hairdresser, not a barber. I saw the movie Shampoo with Warren Beatty. I don't know if you've ever seen it or not. It was a famous movie where he was living in California and Hollywood, doing all these stars' hair, but it was all women, and they all loved him, and they all wanted him, and they all craved him. Well, I saw that movie, and I said, man, he was born to life. I was born to live. So I went to hair school, and in 1985, I was, for haircut, charging $35, which was a lot of money in 1985. It's a lot of money now.
You didn't have just the average. You didn't have just the average clientele, though. You had a lot of country music stars.
Yes, I did.
Yeah,
I was very, very, very lucky in that aspect.
Terry's modest about that because he was actually had somewhat of fame around Nashville as being the hairdresser to the stars of the Grand Ole Opry before he got in the rapping business.
Well, I was just, you know, with everything in my life, I've been lucky. You come to find out that a lot of it is the right place at the right time. And, you know, a lot of it is what we were talking about. It's God, you know, blessing you. And what happened was is I had moved to Nashville. My marriage had broke up. And I was heartbroken, okay, because I had two young children. I'd married my high school sweetheart, and, you know, we're still friends this day, but we grew to find out that, you know, we were just kids, and we were totally opposite, you know. So, of course, back then, the mother always had the children. And I was really heartbroken. So Nashville's not that far from my hometown, which is Shepherdsville, Kentucky, just outside of Louisville. I moved to Nashville and went to work in a really nice hair salon. Met right away some really big name people. And if you're a man in that industry, and you can cut hair, and you can perm hair, women are going to come to you. It's just kind of the way it is. They would rather come to a man and tell him what a jerk their husband is than going to a woman and doing it. And I met people like Donna Hilly, who was really important at that time. I met another lady that hooked me up with a guy named Paul Worley, who at that time was doing Paulette Carlson and Highway 101. He was producing Marie Osmond. Oh, gosh. The list just goes on and on and on. Sweethearts of the Rodeo. He was big. And he's big to this day. He Lady Antebellum. He discovered them and is big for them. Met some guys from Kentucky, some of them, a band named Bluegrass Revival. And if anybody knows anything about bluegrass music, they're probably four of the greatest at what they do. Baleflex, probably the greatest banjo player alive. Sam Bush, one of the best mandolin players. John Cowan can sing like no other. And Pat Flynn can play guitar. So I met all these guys. I did John Schneider's hair. I did Lynn Anderson. I did Vince Gill. You name it. Lori Morgan. List went on. But I was lucky. You know, I was just lucky.
Did you have any desire then to be a wrestler when you was cutting the hair? And did you always want to be a wrestler growing up, or is it just something that just came about?
Of course, living in Louisville, you know, it's back in my childhood is like the rest of us, okay? There wasn't a weekly live television show. They filmed a show out of Memphis, and in Louisville, we received it a week later. Well, I was fans of everyone from Jerry Lawler to Bill Dundee to Handsome Jimmy, even going back to Jackie Fargo and Jerry Jarrett and Tojo Amoto.
Yeah.
And met Bill Dundee, and he kind of thought that I was a character. he liked the way that I talked and went to, you know, he worked with me, and I'm not the biggest guy by any means, okay? I'm 5'11 on a good day, probably 5'10 now, maybe, you know, I'm shrinking every year, it seems. But I only weighed about 220, and I did look like Jimmy Garvin. There's no doubt about it. Except one thing, okay, and let me get this straight right away. I was much better looking than Jimmy. Now, he'll debate that. He'll say he's better looking, but
You got more hair than he's got now, so maybe that's a
plus. I have a lot more than he has now. But I can't fly a plane.
Yeah.
And so, Jimmy was really good about it. You know, at first he first time we talked, he kind of ribbed me. And the first time I was on a show with him, we were in a battle royal together, and he and Michael Hayes jumped me. Immediately they come flying to me, you know, and start beating me to death. And of course, I fought back, and then we all laughed about it. But I'm sorry. Go ahead. I tend to ramble, as you
know. So you was a lifelong fan, so you always had that want to be in the wrestling profession.
Well, I thought that it was something that I could do, okay? And I thought I could make a lot of money at it. I was making a lot of money cutting hair and had a great life, to be honest with you. Had a nice home.
You got a rude awakening after making your first loop up here. Yeah,
boy. Yeah, boy. The first match that I can remember wrestling, okay, I drove from Nashville to just outside of Huntsville, Alabama, and was paid $10. Yeah, and was glad to get it. Then I worked for Dale Mann for quite some time, you know, doing shows. I came up with an idea, okay? The movie Beauty and the Beast was just coming out, and Of course, it hadn't come out yet, I don't think, on DVD, or had just come out. Now, we're talking about 1986, I guess.
Yeah. So it would have been VHS then, for the ones of us that remember VHS.
My grandparents told me about VHS.
May have been Betamax, man. You're a little younger, Bo. You're still a kid, even though you've been around forever.
It ain't the age, it's the mileage. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the first time I remember seeing you is when Fuller sold part of it. He sold the south end of the Continental Territory, and then he came to Knoxville and then opened up USA there. And
yes.
You guys, you and Mark Guline, all of Dundee's guys out of that school, there was four or five of you that made it out of dozens, came
yes.
up and did the first TVs.
Yes.
And
yes.
Was that your first TV exposure? That would have been like February of 88, I guess.
It was before that, wasn't it?
Maybe you did some Continental stuff. They sold at the end of 87, started in 88.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. That would be a hard one for me actually to say. I'd have to think about that, Bo. Sorry. I got hit in the head a lot, man. Had a lot of concussions. Remember, I worked at those Von Erichs in Texas.
Yeah.
And those dudes were like wild Indians, believe me. You know, the reason that the Freebird Von Erich thing got over so big, because it was real. Not only did the people believe it, you had to believe it. You know,
yeah.
You were in the ring with them. It was crazy. But, yeah, I did. I went up. I tell you, kind of a inside funny story. Right when he sold that, he was trying to get it up and going. And this was before the TV. But he had some sponsorship. I believe it was Mountain Dew.
Yeah, Meliello.
Meliello. There you
yeah.
go. There
yeah.
you go. And five fans, I think, were going to win $100 with their ticket. And Mark and I were two of the fans. Now, of course, neither one of us looked like a daggone wrestler, right?
Yeah. They did the year before that, they gave the mink coats away in all the towns. They had the girl in every town win the mink coat, and then they did the Meliello money giveaway in all the towns where five lucky fans would win $100.
Yeah. Right,
and,
right. Well, I won it in a couple of towns, actually. I'll never forget, because after the matches were over, you know, I could have left, basically. I could have, because it was kayfabe, and I couldn't go to the back. Couldn't be seen going back. First thing I remember is when I jumped up with my ticket and swung it around, the whole row that was in front of me and back of me said, "Jimmy Garvin won $100. What the heck? Well, anyway, the matches were over, fans were filing out, and Austin Idol. I had met him once or twice before, of course. And that was probably 6 months before in Memphis. I said, "Austin," I didn't know where the dressing rooms were in that building, because they weren't where we dressed later. They were in the back, okay? Kind of where they filmed the TV. Remember, they didn't film the TV in the big part of that arena.
Yeah, they did.
They filmed
up
it
in the ballroom.
Off the side.
Yeah.
Right, right, right. I said, "I need to give this money back." And Austin says, "Oh, you can give it to me." Yeah, right. I sure will, Austin. I'm green, but I'm not a gourd. I'm from Kentucky, but I didn't fall off the turnip truck yesterday, buddy. But yeah, I did. I wrestled. In fact, I wrestled Scott Armstrong. For USWA. And then after that, I came up with the Beauty and the Beast thing, which was kind of neat because my partner, Mark, a lot of people don't know this, but he was very talented outside the ring. Some people say not inside the ring, but, you know, I thought that he carried his character well. But he was a drummer in the music industry. He drummed for Loretta Lynn. He was also a great carpenter and one of the funniest guys you'll ever meet. But we were knocking things around, trying to figure out a gimmick, and I said, man, look, Beauty and the Beast. I said, you know, I can be Beauty. I was hairdresser, and boy, he liked it immediately. It clicked, and we talked about it. We went to Billy Dundee, and he loved it. Well, I knew nothing about the original Terry Garvin. Nothing. And I didn't know that there was a pink mat before. He gave us the how to do Beauty and the Beast, okay? And we tried to live our gimmick. I mean, we really tried to live our gimmick. And inside the ring as well as outside the ring. Back then, of course, everyone knows, all four of us know that if you went to a bar, the baby faces went to one, the heels went to another. It was taboo to be even seen in the same bar. Well, I couldn't be seen with women. You know, which was a really funny thing because Jeff Jarrett came to me one time and says, you know, Garvin, it's really pretty sad when the heel who's playing a gay, and he didn't say gay, character, has more women chasing him than most of the most of the baby faces. So I looked at him and said, well, what's that say about your baby face crew, Jeff? But luckily, Bill had a lot of pull because he was in the office. He loved the idea, and he wanted to work with us. And
yeah. That's
how we got our shot.
And then Bill brought Adrian Street and Linda in to work with you.
Yes.
He teamed with Bill. You were pretty much married to them for 2 years, first Memphis, then Continental, and then to Dallas.
Well, I tell you a really funny story, which is not funny to Bill. Okay. Eric Embry was booking for the Dallas office for World Class, okay? He had just taken over the book. Kerry was trying to get Jarrett to invest in World Class, okay, because Fritz had backed out at that point, and man, those guys were great wrestlers, but as far as business goes, oh my.
How bad was Dallas when you got there?
Worse than the drizzling drips, let's say.
Yeah.
It was down terribly. But Eric came up and did a show. Little did we know, at the time that he came up, he came up to wrestle Jeff in a light heavyweight match, but he came up looking for talent and who he could use, okay? And they had the Samoan SWAT team there, which was pretty hot. They had a feud going against Michael Hayes and Steve Do It To It Cox. And I had wrestled Steve in a pay-per-view for Vern Gagne, okay? And he dropped me on my head in my hometown on a belly-to-back suplex, believe it or not. So I was dying to get even with him. But about 3 weeks later, Jerry Jarrett comes to me and says, I want you to go to Dallas. Okay? He said, here's your starting date. And I said, well, what does Billy think about this? Because we had, when we started, okay, we wrestled some job guys. Then we went to, like, Scott Steiner and somebody. We beat them. We went to Scott Steiner and Jeff Jarrett, and we beat Scott. And he wanted some time off, and we hurt him. So he left the territory. Then Billy Travis came in. We beat him. Then they put Bill Dundee and Jeff Jarrett together, and we got the win over them. So then, of course, Bill couldn't, you know, I'll never forget, we did a show back then. You had, you know, your four towns basically every week. You had Memphis on Monday, Louisville Tuesday, Evansville Wednesday, and Nashville on Saturday night. You did TV Saturday morning. And
yep,
you also had spot
shows. God only knew where you was going to end up on Thursday and Friday.
Yeah, but you were going to be someplace, more than likely on Sunday, too, in Jonesboro every other week, okay? But here was the deal, and this is where it gets kind of funny, okay? They weren't going to bring Billy and Lawler in to wrestle us because Lawler always did his own thing, okay? But it was starting to get over. And Billy, we were in, I think it was Jackson, Tennessee, had a huge house. It wasn't for television. But Billy set up an angle where they really have us going. It was Handsome Jimmy and Billy Dundee. And the finish was where Billy is just beating me to death, okay? And I didn't take a lot of bumps. Mark took the bumps. I was always the one that came in when somebody was down. Well, I kissed him right in the mouth. And by the way, I think he liked it because he slipped me some tongue, which really surprised me. But they filmed it. They had a... what was his name? He was Jerry Jarrett's. He was kin to Jerry Jarrett some way. His last name was either West or his first name was West. And I know it wasn't Ronnie West.
No. Oh, yeah.
Colin.
No.
Was there Colin West?
No, it wasn't Colin.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Randy, wasn't it? Wasn't it Randy West?
Randy West, yep.
Okay. He was really good at what he did, producing the show and all. Well, he was there, and he got it on tape. I mean, bam. Well, they put it on TV, and, man, you talk about heat. Well, Bill comes out the next Saturday, says, well, you know, I haven't found a partner that knows how to handle this guy, and to be honest, I don't either, but I have one. And, boom, Adrian comes in. Well, we did the deal for about a month, and it was really starting to build up, okay? And then that's when Jerry came to us and said, you're going to Dallas. And Bill was not happy because we had worked on that angle for, you know, quite some time and was just getting it right. And then we went to Dallas. So it kind of left Bill hanging in the wind. Adrian had left his home and came up to Memphis because we were going to get a year out of it. We thought at least 6 months, you know, and that didn't happen. So we went to Dallas, and first night there, I wrestled Beauty and the Beast, wrestled Carrie and Chris Adams. Of all people. Bronco Lubitsch picked us up at DFW. Our flight was late, and this is no joke, I kid you not. We get off the plane, and about 100 Ku Klux Klan members full garb walk through the airport right in front of us. So, you know, I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, what the heck? Our flight was late, and Bronco Lubitsch is there to pick us up, and guess who's sitting in the front seat with him? Skandar Akbar. That was my introduction to to world-class wrestling. We had to drive to, like, not Abilene, San Angelo, which was a haul. And Bronco said three words, and Skandar screamed and hollered the whole way, of course. But we get there, and there's wild-eyed Kerry and Chris Adams standing across the ring from us. That was my introduction.
You know, Eric Embry does not get the credit for turning Dallas around at that point right there, because he brought in new guys. I mean, they had been Von Erich and Freebird and Skandar Akbar to death. I mean, they had Gary Hart had been there on and off for two decades. I mean, they had had the same talent there for so long. And Eric did bring some fresh faces in there and got the business turned around for a little while.
Well, he did. He really turned it around. You know, we filmed a two-hour show on Saturday morning in the Sportatorium, and the tickets were free. So you had every single seat in the arena full. Okay? We wrestled there every Saturday night. And every Friday night we wrestled there. At that time, they had 180 syndications.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, were they still doing Fort Worth every Monday when you got there?
Yes. They were doing Fort Worth, and it was down also. He brought in, okay, they had a crew there that was a great crew. I'll tell you who some of the guys were. A fellow by the name of Super Black Ninja and Kendo Nagasaki, who was actually the Great Muta.
Yeah, Muta.
Was the Black Ninja, yeah. You had Jimmy Jack Funk, you had Matt Bourne, you had Kevin Carey, Chris, Simpsons were still there, Iceman was not there at the time, Buddy Jack Roberts was managing, and he was placed with us. Now, you didn't have a lot of baby faces, though, okay? They brought in Gary Young, Cactus Jack, Beauty and the Beast from Memphis. Now, okay, also at first, Jeff Jarrett made it every week, and Jerry Lawler made it every week.
Yeah.
Okay, we were the original ones that kind of, and to be honest, Gary and Cactus, Mick Foley.
Yeah.
Were they there before?
Did they just not have anybody to handle the day-to-day business? Was that what they were missing?
That pretty much was the. I'll tell you who booked the towns. Okay, is Frank Dusick. Frank's great guy. Don't get me wrong. I like Frank. One funny story about Frank was he told Cactus, who, you know, we were close at that time, Cactus and I hung around a lot, and he told Cactus Jack, he said, Cactus always wanted to be a little higher on the card, you know, he thought that he was a main eventer, and Frank Dusick told Cactus, you'll never be more than a first or second in mid-card if you're lucky. That's all you'll ever be. I guess he kind of missed on that one. But
what was Tony Falk and Percy Pringle, what were they doing when you got to Dallas? Because they had come in a little bit before to help Eric. Were they just running the towns? Or
No. Percy was kind of like Eric's right-hand man there at the building. He also handled all the gimmick sales, okay, and wrote some for the programs. He did whatever was needed, okay?
Yeah.
Tony did whatever was needed. If it was sometimes when I first got there, I did a singles match. I wrestled. The very first match we had was a tag team, and Tony Falk and someone else were the guys that we wrestled. Bronco was the referee. Later in the night, Tony refereed.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Now, you had guys that had been there for a long time that had towns like Ed Watt, and he ran Lawton in Oklahoma, which there was an army base there called Fort Sill. And three times a year, we ran Fort Sill, and it was packed to the rafters. It might have been four times a year. It might have been quarterly. One of the best paydays. We were still doing Tarrant County, I'm sorry, Will Rogers Coliseum. We had some shows at the rodeo arena, Mesquite Rodeo Arena. Did Cotton Bowl shows. We were still doing Cotton Bowl shows, okay? But then you had town, I mean, we did San Antonio. From San Antonio was the furthest south up to Milwaukee. It was that far because of the syndication on television. We did a lot of driving and a lot of flying, you know. At that time, Bill Watts had sold what people knew as Mid-South of the UWF. And Paul Bosch had just, when I got to Dallas, he passed away about 4 months later. Okay, so Houston was open. San Antonio was open. We used to wrestle there in the Hemisphere Arena. We'd go up to Columbia, Missouri, Hammond, Indiana, Copernicus Theater in downtown Chicago, all the way up to Milwaukee, and all points in between.
Why do you think they waited so long? Because they had that syndication before anybody else did. Did you just think Fritz didn't want him to leave Texas?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Fritz was old school. And, you know, it was always an unwritten rule that, and we all know, there was territories, which it'll probably have to go back to that again before it ever gets better, because, you know, I was lucky enough to have a job in Memphis and work there for 6 months, a year, whatever, and then I would have another job waiting for me when I finished up in Memphis, you know. And then when I finished up in Texas, I would have another job waiting for me in Alabama, and so on and so on and so on. And they had an alliance, you know. The NWA was an alliance, and every territory owner was part of that alliance, and they all had votes. Well, Fritz didn't want to step on anyone's toes, as well as Vince Sr. didn't want to step on anyone's toes. Okay, it wasn't until Vince Sr. passed away that Vince Jr. opened it up. And I don't know if you know this or not, but he wanted Kerry Von Erich to be the Ultimate Warrior. Okay? But, of course, Fritz would have nothing to do with that. Because those boys were his bread and butter. And
at that point in time, how was it working with Kevin and Kerry? Were they
like working Gettysburg during the Civil War?
I mean, that discus punch, what at that point in time, when he was medicating himself, that discus punch, I don't think he had any idea where it was going.
Absolutely not. He was a discus thrower in high school. I think he set some records. The story was is he could have gone to the Olympics, but we boycotted the Olympics that year. Okay, now, I don't want to speak ill of anybody, because especially if someone's passed away. And you have to realize I loved Kerry Von Erich. He was the easiest way to put it was a man child. Okay, he was like a big, incredible Hulk, but he was also like somebody you played with when you were 11 years old. It's the easiest way to describe Kerry.
Yeah.
But he was great guy.
Jerry,
I mean,
did you know them when you were young? When they were younger?
No.
They never came around.
Yeah, they didn't leave Dallas much. That's why I didn't know if you'd cross paths with
no.
anywhere other than St. Louis when they started working.
I was partners with Kevin one time.
Now, David left. David was the only one that really left. He went
yeah,
to Florida.
He went to Florida when Dory was booking there, Dory Jr. And then
right.
He worked in Charlotte a little bit.
Kevin came to Atlanta for 9 days.
For 9 days. Well, you know, there was a lot of that. Freebirds went to the WWF or WWF for a week, you know.
Bobby, tell Terry about Kevin's his stay in Georgia Championship Wrestling.
Jim Barnett and, of course, Fritz, you know, as you said, they were very tight. And Fritz got Jim to book Kevin into Atlanta. And he's going to come in here. This is the first territory he'd ever been to outside of Dallas. And, you know, Barnett's going to use him. You know, he's talking. I don't remember who was booking at the time. We had so many of them. But, you know, they're going to use the kid. So when he gets to Atlanta, Barnett tells me, he goes, you take him to the south side, help him get an apartment, show him where he needs to live, how to get around, you know, where the banks are, blah, 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 blah. So I spend a couple days with him, helping him get everything lined up and getting him there. He made all the towns the first week. The second week, he made Monday and Tuesday, and then when Wednesday got there for Columbus, he didn't show up. So everybody's panicking, wanting to know where he's at, what's going on. Well, he decided he didn't want to be here, and he went to Dallas.
There you go.
So he made it 9 days.
9 days.
9 days.
Wow.
Well, that's seven more than I thought that he would have made it. We had a brother there, you know.
Jerry, how were they in St. Louis when you was there with them? Were they under P's and Q's because it was St. Louis, or were they?
No, they were doped up, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Doped
what
up.
Year was that? Approximately. Are we talking in the 70s, 80s?
Early 80s. Probably 80 to 84, they were in and out of St. Louis.
Yeah.
Some
of
them were.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was flying back and forth out there, and yeah, they were buzzed up, man.
Well,
yeah.
David, you know, was a great worker.
He was the best worker, but
didn't
look the part, you know.
Right. The only thing that he had was he was really tall.
Yes.
But Kerry was Adonis, and to be honest, you know, Kevin was built like a like a freight train. A couple of real quick stories, okay? Kevin and I made a road trip one time. Just he and I, he called me, said, Beauty, you know, we're not flying up to do this road trip. It was like 10 days, and we were driving from town to town. We started from Dallas. We went to OKC and then Tulsa, all the way up to Columbia, Missouri, you know, where Mizzou.
Yeah.
And then made a loop back around. And he said, I'd like to go with you and ride with you. And I said, that's cool. He said, anybody, do you have a plan on going with anyone? And I said, well, I hadn't thought about it. And he said, don't, just you and me. we'll split everything, and we'll split the hotel and all, and I'll buy the gas. I said, okay, that's cool, Kev. I'll enjoy that, because we hadn't been around each other a lot. Carrie and I had. But we're buzzing along about 70 miles an hour. We're not on the interstate, but we're on a really nice road. And Kev says, pull over, beauty, pull over. Now, picture this, okay? It's a nice day, and it's summertime. But it's not hot. It may have been like May. And he said, pull over. Well, I thought he had to go to the bathroom, right? And he had no shoes on, nothing but a pair of shorts on, no shirt, anything. He jumps, throws the door open, flies out, and jumps a ditch out into the field, you know, and I'm thinking, man, why is he going way over there to use the restroom? You know, he must really have to go and whatever. Well, he freaking climbs an oak tree like a monkey. He wanted to stop the car to climb this tree. And I'm standing there watching him, you know. Well, he's 10 feet up. Well, he's 20 feet up. Wow, he's 30 feet up there. And then it was running through my mind, if he falls, he's going to break his neck. And what in the world am I going to tell Fritz?
Meditation
you know,
will make you do crazy things.
And, you know, that don't surprise me at all. That does not come as a great shock to me.
He was straight as an arrow. He was straight as an arrow that trip. He may have taken something to sleep, okay, but we went to eat, had normal conversations. We would go to building, we wrestled against each other. We had great matches. Then we
I'm
get something
about this tree. I'm still on this tree.
Okay.
Why did he say
right.
he went up this tree?
Yeah.
Why did he say he went up the tree?
Because he likes to climb trees, man. That's a crazy question. I'm sorry, I couldn't refuse that.
You know, I saw him last year at Cauliflower Alley in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
He looks like he is 100 years old.
Yeah, he looks.
Of course, all his family's been through. I can understand aging, but I mean, he just looks.
You know,
like
he raised all the kids, too, Bobby. He raised your brother's kids. I mean, he raised the whole family. I mean,
Yeah, he did.
And he and Pam have a slew, you know. They don't just have the boys. They had he was a family man. Now, he also, you know, he liked to have his fun. And
how long did he stay up that tree? That's the question, too.
Long enough to look around and, you know, do the Gilligan's Island thing. And long enough for me to eat a sandwich and use the restroom
up,
and drink a Coke.
If he was riding with me, he'd have been up there long enough to need another ride. That's some of the guys if I didn't leave him.
Now, you have to remember, they were paying the checks, too, now. the first time I met Kev, this is a good one. You'll enjoy this, okay? Beauty and the Beast were wrestling Kevin and Carrie. And I've told this story 100 times, but, you know, back then you didn't talk about anything. You know, today I've seen, last show I went to, I think, was in 2000, okay, here in Louisville. My brother wanted some tickets, took him in, and Michael hooked us up, of course. Enjoyed seeing Glenn and Mark and Cactus and, you know, even Rock. But Kevin and Carrie... Back then, all you did was, this is the finish. Everything else, you called in the ring. And you knew what spots the guys, you know, did, so you didn't have to call them beforehand, okay? I watched Kurt Angle here in Louisville go over the end of the match in his head, and it was like 10 minutes long. And I thought, my Lord, if the Von Erichs had to do that. Well, but anyway, the end of the match was.
How long was their attention span in the ring? Did they? Because when you get done, we're going to talk about when he came to John City. Me and you talked about this before.
Okay. Their attention span in the ring was this. Kevin didn't like to sell, number one. Okay. You had to beat him down. I mean, if you had a gun and shot him in the head, he would have made a hot tag or possibly a hot comeback and then tag, okay? But Kerry would sell. There was a difference there. Well, the finish of this match was we get big heat on Kev, and Kerry makes the tag, and we all fight outside the ring and count out. Well, Kev was a little bit sleepy that night. And he comes up to me and asks me, says, "Man, I'm really tired. Do you have anything that might wake me up?" And I said, "What, coffee? what do you want?" "No, never mind. Never met him before. He didn't even know my name." We get in the ring, and we beat him within an inch of his life, and he didn't fight back. And I thought, man, everything I've heard about this guy is totally wrong. What the heck? So I'm doing the spot, and I snapped Miriam in the middle. I said, "I'm going to come off the second rope with a fist move, tag Kerry, give him the hot tag." So here I come off the ropes, and he just lays there. Well, I crushed his skull with my freaking hand. I thought I broke my hand. I thought, oh, my, okay, I think I killed him. So I pick him up. I said, you okay? Yeah. I said, "Okay, look, I'm going to come out of the top rope with an elbow. Tag Kerry, move." He didn't move. Okay. And I mean, it's a wonder they didn't have to bring a defibrillator in and pump his chest back up, because that's how hard I hit him. I said, "Oh, my God, we're going to try this one last time." And by this time, I'd made up my mind I was going to kill him. I said, "I'm going to give you a knee, but I'm coming off the top rope to do it. So you either move or get your head crushed, okay?" And Kerry realized what was going on. So I jump off the top rope. Kerry comes flying in from the corner and puts a claw on me in midair. That's how we went home. True story.
He was daydreaming about climbing trees. That's why he was still laying there.
he was thinking about climbing one of those Georgia pines. You know, he wanted to get up one of those high Georgia pines. But a great guy. Don't get me wrong. I, a lot of people said that Kev wouldn't do business, but as long as you ain't beat you, oh yeah, he'd do business, no problem.
Yeah, did you work for Fritz?
Briefly, yes, briefly. But I was not part of the crew, okay? Yeah. I got
did
to
he,
know Fritz
he,
real well.
Did he just get to even wash his, I mean, he just washed his hands of it, just left it?
Well, he kind of washed his hands of it, you know. After they did an angle where they tried to rehash the Freebird Von Erich thing, and they made it where Fritz came in the cage instead of smashing on his head or whatever. I'm sure everyone knows it, but Fritz, they're going back to the dressing room, and Fritz falls down. Okay. And so the story goes, or so what Kev told me, and Kerry told me too, was that they were just going to fake him breaking a rib. But they said that he had a heart attack, and they
That was really the end of world class when that started.
Well,
that goes right back to what you was talking about earlier, Bobby. There's a fake heart attack.
Yeah.
And that was their last big show in Reunion
Arena.
And after that, it took a nosedive.
You can't do stuff like that. And go ahead, and I'll tell you what Robert Fuller wanted me to do in Continental. Y'all make your points, and you'll love this one.
Robert, we talked about this when Kerry passed. Robert brought Von Erichs to Continental. That was their only time ever coming up here to John City, Knoxville, Chattanooga, Birmingham. They made the whole. They were in and out here for 2 or 3 months. They worked with Dundee, and they did some six-mans with Dundee, different partners, and they tagged with one of the Richards, or they, you know. But we talked, me and Terry talked about this. Tell them about when he slammed Robert Fuller in Johnson City, how hard Kerry slammed him.
Okay. we're in a high school gym. And Robert loved to play Crazy Eights, okay? We all lived in this apartment complex. David Woods, he owned the TV stations. He's the one that bought both Continental territories. But he had an apartment there, and he put some of the guys up. And the other guys rented apartments there. Robert and I, my apartment was right on the pool. And Robert and I would sit out in the sun every day and play Crazy Eights. And he'd say, you know, I'm going to put the hoss on you. I'm going to put the hoss on you. Well, he says, you know, Beauty. And he always called me Beauty, and so did Kerry, and so did Kev, for that matter of fact. He said, Beauty, you know, I got that Kerry Von Erich. That's how he said it. We wrestled Knoxville on Friday and Johnson City Saturday, right?
Yep.
And he says, oh, I got that wild end in Kerry. Oh, man. Normally, Lawler wrestled him, or Dennis Condrey was the champion at that time. He would wrestle him. For some reason, they didn't make the trips. And Robert was forced to do it, okay? And Robert, he told me and Jimmy Golden and Beast, he said, I'm going to tell that, you know what, not to pick me up and slam me, because I wrestled me and Jimmy wrestled him and Jeff in a match in Memphis, and he almost slammed me through the ring. And I said, oh, Robert, he slammed me 100 times. It's not that bad, which it was. But you have to know Robert, and he's all legs and crazy as a bed bug, you know. Well, he said, well, he's not going to slam me, Beauty. He's not going to slam me. I said, okay, whatever. So you couldn't talk. They were addressing the other side. They go to the ring, and ding, ding, the bell rings. They lock up. Kerry snatches him up, presses him over his head, and I mean slammed him. Oh, my goodness, man. It was like boom. Robert rolls out of the ring immediately. We're all watching from the dressing room door. And he comes walking back bow-legged. Ah! Got those hands flailing in the, air. And I'm thinking, oh, he's doing the gimmick where he's going to let them get the 7 or 8 and go running back, right? Well, no, heck no. He hits the dressing room. I said, what are you doing? He said, I crap my pants. Jimmy, get the damn ring.
Oh, the kid set the ring up then. He slammed him so hard, Robert hit on his back and bounced back to his feet. That's how hard he threw him on the ground.
And you're talking about a 6'5", 6'6" man here. But now, in all honesty, Kerry had worked out that day, and he was a little pumped up, or maybe I should say jacked up.
Jeez. I worked with David San Martino when they had him in here. Bruno working as Bruno Jr.,
mm-hmm.
Bruno's kid, and he did that deal with me. Now, I was about 240, 250 at the time, working under a hood, filling in for somebody. And I wasn't working every night anymore. I was working in the office. So, you know, it didn't take a whole lot to blow me up anyway at the time. But he snatched me up, and he pressed me like that and slammed me. And he looked down, and he goes, "Get up." And I went, "No, cover me."
Yeah, bend me.
I said, "We're through."
Bend me.
Was the ring in Dallas, was it as hard as it looked?
Yeah, harder.
I mean, it was just a stage, wasn't it, with ropes on it?
It was harder.
Yeah.
I would have rather taken a body slam on that wooden floor, really.
Yeah.
It didn't have a lot of give. It didn't even have to have, you know, mics on it or under it, to be honest. The crowds were really right on top of you. And it was no air condition. Oh, my goodness, man. I wrestled Eddie Gilbert to a 60-minute Broadway one time in August. I lost 14 or 15 pounds. He lost 10 or 12. Now, that's no joke. I mean, you know. But I wished I could go back and do it all again. It was that fun.
How did the Jarrett Von Erich thing just crumble to where it ended up selling Dallas to the global people?
Well, that's a good story. Jerry, at first we were all flying, okay? And Jerry Jarrett came up with the big idea. You know, he's a businessman. The Von Erichs are not.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, when he went down and looked at the books and everything, he found out that the reason that they were doing so bad was, of course, number one, they didn't have any direction whatsoever. Jerry Jarrett was a smart man now, as far as booking goes, okay? Give the devil his due. He had a real knack for knowing how to turn a territory around. But when he went through the books, he found out that they had owed money to limousine services, like $1,000 to a florist. You know, now I never saw a flyer one the whole time I was in Dallas. And if you'd put a flyer in a sport toy, it might have lasted 3 minutes before wilting. Or the rose petals falling off because you could see your breath in the ring in the winter.
Yeah.
You could take a cat and swing it around and throw it, and it would go through the wall and not hit anything. It was basically a tin building, you know. But probably one of my favorite buildings to ever wrestle. And, you know, because the fans were very lively. They were very close. But there was times when it was like taking your life into your own hands trying to get to the dressing room. The aisles were narrow, and the fans were, you know, right on top of you. And these people had never seen me wrestle before in my life. And we're like the fourth match. We're going to the ring, and I noticed that Bill Cobble's head of security. And great guy, he says, "Now listen," he said, "I've got certain instructions." He said, "Put your hands, one hand on each shoulder," he said, "and look down and don't stop." And I'm like, "What? What are you talking about?" And he said, "Please just do what I'm asking." Okay, fine. Well, you had to come out of the dressing room. If you were a heel, you made a left. You're walking underneath. It looks like you're in a cave. Only thing that the ceilings are low and there's poles and it was dark. You smelled Jack's French fries. That was all you could smell. Well, you got to the top of the aisle, and there it was, man. It opened up in front of you, and 5,000 people were there and sweat. Oh, my gosh. You know, it smelled like a rodeo arena in the summer. So, anyway, we headed to the ring, and I did exactly what he said, and I think I was hit maybe four times. But I had six bodyguards around me, and three of those stopped to fight, and Bill was punching people. And I got to the ring, and I'm like, what in the world? You know, why are they so mad at me? Well, getting back was even rougher, okay, because we won. And the people are screaming faggot in unison. Which, you know, is really politically incorrect. It hurt my feelings. Picture 5,000 people screaming, faggot.
I can imagine them Texas Cowboys had never seen anybody on a pink mat and dressed in pink and going to the ring with Liberace playing.
There you go.
Holding a candelabra.
Yeah, we carried a candelabra, and Buddy had an atomizer and sprayed white powder. When we'd meet people, he would take the job guys and cover them with powder while they were laying on the mat, and we were kicking their brains out. But I got to the back, and I said, Eric, why in the world were they so mad at me? Well, they had made five videos total of us, one introducing me, one of me exercising and eating Chinese food, one me getting my hair done, another one buying a fur. They were great. They were great pieces. They played one each week before we got there. And Eric said, well, I'll be honest with you. He said, we've had death threats against you. People have written the TV station and said if we bring that queer into here, we'll kill him. I said, well, that'd have been nice to know before I went to the ring.
The very first ESPN show that you guys were on, I've got it. There was two cowboys jumped in the ring.
Yeah.
That night, and that was the first syndicated show that you guys made.
Yeah, that's true. And do you remember how it ended? Do you remember how that ended?
No, I've not watched it in a long time. I remember you working with Jeff Jarrett and somebody. And
mm-hmm.
they
cut it away, actually. There was more than two. But Mark was in the ring and made a hot tag. Jeff was selling. And it might have been Eric Embry, but we had one of them down, and I was really doing something. I think I took that atomizer. Buddy handed me atomizer and got Bronco, and I'm smacking him in the head with it, okay? Well, I look up, and here comes this guy with a cowboy hat, and I'm thinking, why is one of the security guys coming into the ring? And then I recognized it wasn't a security guy, okay? Well, I put the boots to him as he's coming through. You know, first thing you're taught is don't let him get in the ring. A fan doesn't know how to get into the ring. So, you know, get your shots then. And I look up, and Buddy is clobbering another one, you know. They were coming from every angle, man. But two of them made it on TV. And by that time, the security guys were in there, and they were grabbing them and holding them. I can remember one of them, not that night, but another one blindsided me when I was in the ring, and they brought him to the back. There was a hallway with a door going out it, and they called me to come out. I thought they wanted to ask if I wanted to press charges. Three of them were holding him, said, go ahead, kick him. Go on. We've already called the police.
You can't have fun like that anymore.
No, well, I didn't do it. Not hard, anyway. But Dallas was unique, yes. It was very unique territory. And you better be tough. You had better be tough. I know I've rambled, But San Antonio one night, they did a big, we'd just gone back, and they did a big write-up on the front page sports section, and my instructions were to get over. Well, we had Kerry and Chris Adams because that particular night, Kevin didn't make it, surprise.
How often did that happen? Where one of them made the town and the other one didn't, or neither one of them made the town?
Well, both of them making it probably 30%, maybe, maybe 40. We used to take bets on it if they'd both make it, and then you've got to filter in the fact that sometimes they would make it to the building but not to the ring. And if you want to hear a story on that, I will tell you one.
Yes.
But anyway, we got to the finish, and the finish was we, Buddy, and we got the heat on Kerry, believe it or not, and Buddy and Mark handcuffed Chris to the ropes, okay? And I took a chair, and I hit Kerry so hard that I thought I killed him. Okay, the chair was a metal chair. It bent over his head. He went down on one knee, okay, and I thought, oh, my gosh, I've killed him. He starts getting up and says, hit me again. I'm like, oh, my God. So I turned the chair over, you know, and not the flat part. I'm talking the bar part. I hit him so hard I thought I broke my wrist. Blood shot over my head. I split him like a watermelon. I mean, he was juiced to the gills, and he went down, stayed down that time because he had no choice. So, of course, I am thinking, boy, this is going to be heck in the back, you know. But I stood my ground, and we didn't all dress in the same room. Well, about 10 minutes later, here comes Kerry storming into my dressing room, and Mark and I are in there, you know, and I'm thinking, man, I'm going to have to fight this big son of a gun. Oh, man. He comes flying straight up to me, grabs me, and puts me in a bear hug and starts hugging me and kissing me. He says, man, that's great. I think we'll sell out the next time we come. They bought it, didn't they? They bought it. I said, yeah, so did I. But that was them.
Jerry Oaks, were they ever so bad? Were they ever so bad in St. Louis they didn't go to the ring?
No. No.
Yeah.
No, they wasn't going to mess that up.
Yeah. I know that happened a few times when they came in here to the Continental for Fuller, and when Dundee was booking too. Kerry, when I was just a kid taking the ring jackets back in Johnson City one night, they had Kerry and a six-man with the Riches, and Johnny Rich told Davey Rich, do not tag him into the finish. And that was it. He come in, put the claw on somebody, and that was it. I mean, the rest of the time he just stood in a daze in the corner.
Yeah.
That's really, really pitiful and sad that they live their life like that.
Yeah. Well, it is. They were unlimited potential. And they could wrestle. You know, Lawler had fantastic matches. Well, good matches with Gary, you know. But we wrestled. It was supposed to be Jeff and Kerry one night in Evansville, Indiana. And we come to the ring, we're in the ring, and here comes LaGrange, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Here comes the whole song, went all the way through, no Jeff, no Kerry. I'm looking, you know, I said, where are they? It's Paul Neighbors, referee. I said, where are they? He's shaking his head, I don't know. So it starts again. About halfway through it, here comes Jeff by himself. He gets in his corner, and Mark and I are looking at each other. What in the world? We had just talked to Kerry, you know, 30 minutes, 20 minutes before, because we'd all dressed together. And Jeff told Paul to tell us that Kerry was indisposed. He was in the bathroom in a stall, passed out. Well, you know, we're like, okay, what are we going to do? And, you know, they said, well, you're going to wrestle a handicap match with Jeff. Well, of course, we ran over and jumped on him, started beating him down. Now, we were going to give him a hot comeback, I grant you. But after about 10 minutes, you know, throwing him out of the ropes, over the ropes, and everything else, his head's bleeding, okay, just getting ready to tell Jeff to make a comeback, all of a sudden, out of the blue, here comes Kerry charging down the aisle. Fans start screaming. He jumps up to the ring apron, goes to jump over the ropes, hooks his foot on the top rope, takes a head bump. Boom! Damn near knocked himself out. Well, but I'll give you this. When he got up, he cleaned house, man. He was a whirlwind. He was swinging. It's a wonder my grandchildren didn't come out, you know, Down syndrome or something.
Yeah.
He hit me that hard.
It's amazing that they did make as many pounds as they did, and it did last as long as they did.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, it's so sad because they were, I liked all of them. I knew Chris really well. He was really a small guy. And as a favor to Fritz and to Kevin and to Kerry, I helped train him. And his first match at the Dallas Sportatorium was against Percy Pringle and myself against Kevin and Chris. And Percy and I laughed about that a lot. But, you know, the world class could have been the WWF. It could have. They had the talent coming in and out. They had the Bruiser Brodies. They had the King Kong Bundys. The Freebird Von Erich thing was great. Jimmy Garvin was wonderful.
They had the TV syndication long before anybody else had it, too.
Right. But, you know, you also had Chris Adams headbutting a pilot in midair, you know, and going to prison for that.
Were you on that flight?
No. In Israel, he super kicked the front desk clerk because at night in Israel they cut the phone lines off. Okay. He and Tony were fighting, and Chris got mad and left his room, went straight to the front desk and super kicked him, you know, knocked the guy's teeth out. They had to smuggle him out of the country on a transport plane. That's a true story. Absolute true story. It was like the Indians were beating the Cowboys and the Indians were the good guys. It was strange.
That's the exact reason I walked in on a Thursday morning, laid my keys on the desk, and said I quit. Because it had gotten to the point it was like running a daycare center for adults. We were doing those tours up north, and I'd get them Lincoln Continentals to drive. We paid for the cars. We gave them a per diem to eat on every day. We paid them for working. We played their trans. I mean, they were making a lot of money following this Superstation 17 out of Atlanta. They, you know, we'd go anywhere. Selective where we went. We didn't step on anybody's toes, like you said, because Barnett was very loyal to the NWA. But
right.
When you get a phone call at 2 o'clock in the morning because two guys are driving a Lincoln Continental down a railroad track, and they're so messed up, they don't know what they're doing. And the car's so messed up, they're having to kick the tires to get it to go straight where to leave and roll. I mean, you know, I just, you're right. You know, that's the ugly part of our business that the fans didn't see, or you hope they didn't see. And how we kept a lot of this stuff out of the newspaper, I'll never know. But
no,
that
story he was telling about Chris Adams, that was the first national news story I remember about a wrestler when he headbutted the pilot because they wouldn't serve him any more alcohol. That was in every newspaper. AP ran it. It was in the local paper here in East Tennessee. And he was
as bad as that was then. Could you imagine if that happened now?
Oh yeah. Oh my goodness.
Well, there was no internet back then. There was no cell phones. I mean, think about it.
You just think about the jail time he would do now, though. After 9/11 and everything,
he did a year then, or 18 months.
18 months.
He probably do 5 years or maybe 15 now, because that's with what happened with the World Trade Centers. You know, that's very, very serious, and it was then. His air piracy was what he was charged with. But Chris was a great guy as long as he didn't drink. When he drank, he was Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, you know. He came to, I had a really nice townhome that overlooked, it was in the HEB area, and it was on the 9th golf green of this golf course, and it was 3-story, and I had a huge, huge deck that was, he'd go out and it was just great, and Chris was out there and he'd had several drinks. And I said, give me your keys, you know, give me your keys. No, I'm fine, beauty, I'm fine. I don't live that far. So it was either going to have to fight him or, you know, let him go. And at the time, he was married to a girl, I think her name was Brandy, and she kept calling my house over and over and over. Well, I told her, I said, Brandy, he's too drunk to drive, and they didn't have another car. But she didn't believe me. She thought that I was, you know, lying for him. I said, I'll drive him home if you'll drive me back. You know, I'm not going to stay at your house. Just give him the car keys. He made it about a half mile and pulled over at a 7-Eleven. He said he had to use the restroom, and he hit a telephone pole, and next thing I know, he was in jail and missed TV. That's what you were dealing with. Mm. True story. There was way more that you can't tell.
And you look at that territory, and you're one of the very few that's left that's still alive that worked there at that time.
Well, I mean, there's Bill Irwin, you know, is still around.
Yeah.
Johnny Mantell is still around. Of course, you have Michael and Jimmy Garvin are still around. God rest his soul, Bam Bam Gordy is gone.
Yeah.
You know, I love Bam Bam. Dewey Robinson's passed away. He was there. He passed away several years ago of cancer. Brody was stabbed, you know, in Puerto Rico by Jose Gonzalez. Kevin's the only Von Erich living.
Yeah.
Did you
have any dealings with Gino Hernandez or different time frame?
It was just a couple of years before. Now, when I got down there, Chris still lived in the condo that was right by Gino's, okay? Now I knew Gino, okay?
Okay.
I'd met Gino several times, but I never wrestled with him.
He had a run of about 30 days in Georgia.
Is that it? Really?
He was hard on them boys, Bobby.
Let me tell you what he did one night. Doug Smith was the office manager for Jim Barnett before I was. And Doug weighed about 150, and that may be stretching it, Jerry. Is that about right?
That's about right, Bobby.
Okay. Doug was salty. Doug was a good-looking guy. He was very soft-spoken until you got to know him, but Doug was salty. I mean, he didn't take no crap off nobody. And he come out of that Dyersburg area, friends with the Fullers and the Welches, and you know. And we were in Griffin one night, and Gino was doing a deal with somebody, and he had a blade taped on his finger, and Doug was refereeing, and when Doug went down to count or something, and Gino just reached over and took that blade and just raked it across the top of Doug's hands, giggled, you know, just being funny, and laughed about it, thought it was funny. Well, Doug didn't say nothing in the ring. When Gino come through the door into the dressing room, the first thing he met was Doug's fist right between his eyes. I mean, knocked him down. And Doug says, if you ever cut me again, I'll kill you. Do you understand me? And that sort of abruptly ended his run because Doug was Barnett's right-hand man at the time. He was the office manager before I was. And then when Doug told him what happened and all that, yeah, that kind of ended. The honeymoon was over.
Well, I met Jimmy Barnett, okay, Jimsy, or however you put it. Obviously was great businessman, but he walked to the beat of a different drum, and we all know that. He and Terry Garvin, you know, the original Terry Garvin. My name's not Garvin, you know. But anyway, I was very also close with Gary Hart, okay? I worked for Gary several different places, world class, and another one that competed against Jarrett's, what'd they change the name to, Bo?
They changed it to USWA, and then Gary opened up Texas Wrestling All-Stars, was that something like that?
It was Texas Championship Wrestling.
Yeah, that
from
was
the Metroplex Arena.
Yeah.
And, you know, Gary was... He was not that way. He was married to a really wonderful lady, but he had worked for Jim Barnett, and I think he kind of patterned himself after it. You know, hey, yes, my boy.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, he booked in here. He was an assistant booker here for a while.
Yeah, well, there you go. See, you know, I'm sure he patterned himself, you know, because Barnett was such a great businessman, and Gary was too, they say, in the early 80s. He gets a lot of the credit for the Freebird, bringing the Freebirds in to battle the Von Erichs and all, but you'll all like this story. Dewey Robinson, who I thought was a great, great wrestler, and, you know, the missing link thing was so off the wall it got over, but he had a good body as long as you didn't mind him walking around naked, you know, because he was a nudist. He was fine, but there was a big office. Fritz had a big one upstairs, and Gary had one that Eric took over later on. Well, for some reason Dewey was mad over payoff, and he came in, was going to whip Gary, okay? Well, Gary smoked cool cigarettes, and he carried them in a cigarette case holder that was silver. And in that silver case holder, he carried a razor blade. And Dewey came in and told Gary he's going to whip his, you know what? Well, Gary, well, wait a minute, my boy. Let me smoke a cigarette and let's work this out. Well, he slipped that razor blade in between his fingers, and he said, well, if you think you have to do it, Dewey, just come on. And, boy, Dewey comes after him, and Gary starts, you know, slapping him like Flair chops. But Dewey didn't realize it until after, you know, third or fourth one to the chest, face, and everything else. But he was cutting him to ribbons. I mean, blood was all over the office, you know. Kind of like that deal you were talking about, USA, you know. You remember this, I'm sure, Bo. Stomper and one of the Moondogs were wrestling as tag team, and Dundee brought one of his students up. And they were going to do a thing where Archie stomped him in the head, okay?
Yeah, and Larry cut him, yeah.
And Larry, yeah, it was Larry. You're right, it was Larry. And he cut him from, oh, man, I mean from one side to the other and deep. And I thought he was going to bleed to death.
Yeah, the local TV here, they made him put a black plate up over his head. They wouldn't even show it. It was so much.
It was that bad, right, right.
Yeah.
Well, he comes to the back, and the booker was kind of two-part. It was Dundee, and it was also Bob Armstrong.
Bob Armstrong.
Bull Bob, right. And They told him lay down on a table and calm down. They said, you know, you just cut the vein there. If you'll calm down, it'll quit bleeding.
Yeah.
He laid there, and he was starting to calm down, and Hector Guerrero walks over to him and looks at him, starts shaking his head, and he says, oh, man, you need to go to the hospital. I seen a guy die from a cut like that. Blood almost hit the ceiling.
That's it.
Well, with that, we have run out of time for this week. Terry, I thank you for joining us. You need to work on that bashfulness you got.
Yeah, so. Next time I'll talk, I promise.
All right. We got a few seconds just left here. Everybody tune in next week. Jerry and Bobby, I'll send you an email, let you know what we got going on next week. Thank everybody for calling in and joining us tonight.
Gentlemen, thank you.
Thanks, guys. Good night.
Great to meet you guys. Good night.
All right.